üç klarnet. So, this is roughly the glimpse of our country, how much diversity is there. If you go to the north, if you go to the south, east, west, there are different kinds of topography, different kinds of people, different kinds of culture, different kinds of food habit. So, that's why I just wanted to give you a glimpse of it. I'll go to the main presentation. Before that, I'll just share it again with the screen. So my study area was western part of India, where there is a desert. Huge part of western part of India is covered by a desert called Thar Desert. And I went there for almost 4 years to understand the challenges in the school education system there. And there's a background of it. I'm sitting in a very nice city called Bangalore, very pleasant weather. Hedy was there. Hedy must be agreeing with me that very pleasant weather. You need not to go anywhere to just feel that kind of warmth and that kind of heat. But I started going there. There's a background of it. I would just like to show you the kind of area where I worked within this Rajasthan. It is the state of Rajasthan. Within this Rajasthan, I went to a particular block. Our units are like within the state. There are districts. Within the district, there are blocks. These are the sub-units of the district. So there's a block called Shiv, and there are few areas I surveyed in the Shiv block, which is bordering Pakistan. And this is the area where schools are not necessarily closed, but teachers and the students both face different kind of challenges, which I wanted to learn and understand what is happening there. And when I was going there, I was also taking some of my students who were doing some internship for 6 weeks' time. They were going and they are staying there for 6 weeks, spending their time with the schools to understand the context and understand the kind of things happening there. So many times when we don't know and understand the context, there might be a possibility of judgment that something is not happening because of some reasons which we assume. I wanted to understand, immerse into the situation to understand what is happening there actually, keeping my feet into the shoes of the teachers over there to know their regular challenges and the regular problems associated with the school system. The background is this. I belong to one part of India which is in the eastern side called West Bengal, and I was born and brought up in a very small rural area. where I studied in a public school. In India nowadays, public school and private school, there is a very different kinds of separation. So people who are well off, they normally go for high-end private schools rather than public schools. And there are public schools of different types. There are certain kinds of public schools which are also having good funding, etc., but not necessarily all the schools having the same kind of status. But I went to a typical rural, very underprivileged, you can say, that kind of school, where I was privileged, but my dad's job was there. So I had no other choice other than going to that particular school which was available there. When I was in 8th grade, there was a flood in that particular locality. And during this flood, our school became a shelter for the local people who were affected by the flood. As a result, school was closed for almost 15 to 20 days initially. Then they stated that it will continue for the days when flood water is still there in the village. Our school was not flooded, but it was a shelter. So as a result, our school was finally closed for 2 months. And after 2 months, when we went back to the school, it was full of dirt and they had to clean it. So another 15 days, school was closed. Finally, when the school reopened, our annual examination was there. So immediately in the annual examination, we appeared, those who were so-called privileged, we appeared, we passed, we got good result, etc. But I lost 32 of my friends. We are half of the class. We were promoted in the next class, which was 9th grade. So 8th grade to 9th grade, you can imagine I was in the adolescence. And I was clueless. Why were my friends? And later, in another 1 to 2 months' time, I could see them in the local market who were doing some selling business along with their parents. And whenever they were seeing me, they were hiding their face as if they have done something wrong, which is not the case. It is because of the context. The children were already excluded from the education system. It stayed in my mind for a long time. I was in a trauma because the kind of children whom I was studying with, they were from farmer's family, from some worker's family, daily wage worker's family, and I was missing them. Later part, I got to know a lot of my girls who were the classmates, they got married at age of 13, 14 years. So that was the kind of background which played a big role in my mind somewhere. And I didn't decide anything. That point of time at 13, 14 years age, you can't decide about anything that I'll do something. But it was somewhere hidden in my mind. Therefore, whenever I started working in education, I started hunting for these children who are not necessarily posed in the data. Data will always show you something like a poverty. Because of the poverty, people have been excluded. It's not the case. It is also there are a social kind of structure which also exclude people. It is not only poverty. It might be natural hazards. It might be something like an armed conflict. And finally, when I landed up with this Ajim Premji Foundation, I started going to these odd places rather than staying in the Bangalore with my comfort zone. So that was one of the reasons I went to this place, because I just went for my visit with the students and I found there are some interesting places where children are not coming to the school regularly for various reasons. It is not a single reason. I'll show you some of the things and I'll show you about the research project little bit, whatever I have done, but time is very less. So I'll keep these things up to some level so that you can understand where I have worked and how things actually panned out. So my objectives was to analyze the challenges associated with the geoclimatic conditions and livelihood related issues. Analyzing interlinkages between livelihood related issues and its long-term impact on school education. Understanding issues associated with socio-cultural beliefs and practices that have interlinkages with schooling patterns and practices. Analyzing current school-related policies and practices in the school education system. Addressing issues or adding on to the issues. And finally, exploring good practices existing in the schools and exploring possibilities. So basically, you need not to go through all these objectives because I can't talk about all the objectives. I can talk about some of the things which I find. So the block I surveyed, it is a huge block. And when I'm saying it is huge block, it is not in terms of the stretch. It is also in terms of the population. Next part of the story is, I'll show you another video clip right now. And I know for the online people, I have to go back and forth a little bit. Bear with me. Because without showing that, probably it will be difficult for you to understand the kind of context I'm talking about. Now I would request you to keep your pen and paper ready to write something, whatever you are seeing on the video, and we may have a discussion around it. Whatever you are seeing, if you have any particular question around it, if you have any particular comment around it, so you can just, we will have a dialogue after this, okay? Yeah. Sorry for this. I'll pause the video in between and I'll ask a couple of questions and then we'll watch the video again.
Far away to the farthest corner of the world. Roam about my mind at will. Accompanies a tune of flute that makes air to weep. The path that loses track frustrated past many a territory. My hungry mind wishes to pursue that path to an unknown destiny.
Thank you.
I get some sense of yours or you, any comment, any question, anything you noted down? Yes, please.
It's very poorly connected to the rest of India, like super difficult to get to this area or to leave or to explore beyond it. From what
Absolutely.
It seems.
Thank you. Any other comment? Basically, it is very, very difficult to talk about a place having 52 degrees temperature, standing in a place where it is minus 7 degrees. That is the biggest contrast. Yeah, please. Yes.
Yes, I noticed the very high illiteracy rate of both male and female, like males 29% and female up to 59%.
Yeah.
So what do you mean by illiteracy? Does that mean that the student don't finish basic education or just primary education or secondary education? So what do you mean by that?
I'll come to that. What's your name? Can you please introduce your name and your country? That will be useful, actually. First, can you please introduce your name and your country?
Yeah, Alex Shapiro from the United States.
Okay, yeah, thanks. You are from?
I'm Chi, and I'm from Vietnam.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. I'll come to your question. Yes, you wanted to say something?
I was going to talk about the illiteracy rate, but what actually caught me off guard was the difference between the men and the women in the illiteracy rates, which I can imagine relates to like the access to schooling and what you're going to talk to us about today. I'm Sahar from Puerto Rico.
Thank you so much. Any other comment from right side, center side? Anyone? So interestingly, you have noticed that illiteracy rate is quite high for females, and there's a gap between male illiteracy rate and female illiteracy rate. Normally, we declare illiterate when the people don't have the basic or foundational literacy, numeracy. We declare them as illiterate. And as per that parameter, many of these people might have never been into school. Forget about the dropout. They have never been into school. And I have met multiple parents like this in this particular area who have never been into school. School is a new entity for their life. And first generation schoolgoers are their children. So dropout is a very fancy word for them, I would say. School is a new entity, and in that way, they are illiterate. Did I answer your question? Okay. And as correctly you have pointed out, there's a huge difference between male and female here. And it is also reflected through the sex ratio. Here, especially in this particular state, sex ratio was very, very low. Till now, it is very low compared to other states. There are particular states where sex ratio is very low. One of those states is Rajasthan. And I'll go for this as you have also mentioned that it is very difficult to stay here. It is, because one of the reasons is the areas are very, very remote. When I came to Finland 2 days back, I was just saying that everything is so set, so nice. I was feeling about my own area where I used to go. Electricity was not there when I was there for my field work for continuously 2 days, no electricity. And at that point of time, it was 2 degrees. The range of temperatures from 2 degrees to 52 degrees in this particular area, because it is a desert. When you go in month of December, in the daytime, it might be 30, 32 degrees. In the evening time, it will automatically, suddenly it will drop into 6 to 8 degrees, or sometimes it go up to 3, 4 degrees. So you can see the kind of range of temperature. And you are seeing the terrain. Now let us see where I went. Let us run along with me to the field. Okay? And you can just keep your notebook and pen ready for your understanding. I'll stop it here for the time being. Questions, comments, anything you understood, which is different? Yeah.
Hello, I'm Dinda. I'm originally from Indonesia. So seeing this is quite not very a new thing because this happened also in Indonesia, but I'm now studying in Oulu. I just wondering, because you said that education is, or school is, new entities in that area. I'm wondering about how education system come historically for the first time in India, because maybe it affects also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very nice question. I'll come to that in our presentation. Thank you for raising this question. I'll come to that. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, I'm Anna-Lena from here, Jyväskylä. I noticed the poster with the school lunch program. Is it like free lunch or pay for lunch, or what sorts of lunch is that?
Yeah. It is called midday meal in India. So it is a lunch system which was introduced a few years back. And I'll come to those policy things little bit while I discuss about the policy. As per our policy right now, Right to Education Act is there, which is an act which is legally enforceable. As per that, schools have to follow certain things in terms of their physical infrastructure, in terms of the facilities in the school. One of the facilities is midday meal, which is free of cost. It is served in the school. Sometimes schools serve them the midday meal as per their own choice of their own by their own cooks in the school premises. Sometimes it is also from some NGO they are providing the food from outside, because the schools may not have a proper kitchen or something like that. So they may get it from the NGO, through the NGO. The fund is accordingly given to the NGO. So fund comes to the school. School can decide what is the kind of menu they will provide. Whatever you have seen that is written in Hindi, the language. So every day, whatever will be given, that is displayed on the school board, or it might be on the wall. In that particular area, mostly it is printed on the wall. So you can see that is also a wall. It was not a notice board. It is just printed on the wall. And whatever they are providing from Monday to Saturday, the menu is provided there. It is free of cost. And it is provided as a part of the lunch. It is just a lunch, nothing else. Just in the noon time, they have the lunch in the school. Yeah. So any other comment? Yes.
Hi, my name is Dina. I'm originally from Russia, but now I'm studying changing education at the University of Helsinki. I have like comment and two questions probably. So nothing surprised me that much in this presentation, because I have to deal with Indian context free work. But the thing that I noticed, that obviously the school is located so far away that it is poorly equipped compared to international standards. I mean, of course, there is no Wi-Fi connection and so on. So my first question was, how usually big are those schools in the farther regions? And the second one, how is the teaching organized? What I mean by that is, do teachers come and go every how often? And are they probably assigned to a specific place to teach by the government or state? Or how is it done in India? Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So to answer to her questions, part of this will be also covered in my presentation. To answer to your second question, that when you say what is the policy in teachers coming to the school, or teachers are recruited, how those teachers are recruited. So in India, education is in the concurrent list. As a result, it is both center and the state. They can decide about education policy. So one part of the policy is made at the national level. As per the national level policy, you have to frame your state policy. So your state policy from Rajasthan to another state, for example, in my native state, might be different to some extent, not a very large extent, but to some, a small extent, it might vary. And regarding the teachers here, for the teachers' recruitment, teachers' appointment, and how these teachers will not get transferred or will get transferred, those terms and conditions are also decided by the State Education Department. So for this particular region, as you are seeing this context, many of the teachers, they stay here. They have to stay here, I would say. There is no other option, because the kind of journey I was showing you, Jaipur to Barmer and then Barmer to the block, Barmer to that block is another 60 kilometer. So Jaipur to Barmer is your 460 kilometer. Jaipur is the capital of Rajasthan. From there, you are going to one more location called Barmer, which is 460. Then another 60 kilometer, you have to reach the block location. So it is 520 kilometer. Every day, anyone from that kind of particular city of Jaipur to this area, it is not possible to go back and forth. And many people, many teachers here, they are from other districts. Therefore, they have to stay here. And another part of the story, I'll come to that during my presentation also. Another part of the story is many of these teachers can't bring their family to these places because the infrastructure is so poor. If something happens in terms of your health emergency, people can't go to a hospital. There is no health center, hospital nearby. And many times, internet, electricity, all these things are also challenged. As a result, most of the teachers I have seen, they are from other districts of the same state. They don't bring their family to this place because of all these challenges. So in that way, usually if you look at some good places where all these facilities are there, teachers live with their family, are they are more stable. But in these kinds of areas, teachers are not living with their family, and that is not only the reason. There are some kind of other arrangements also. Because of that, teachers don't want to stay back here. I'll talk about that other arrangement later when I'll talk about the system. Okay, let us continue a little bit. Okay. For the time being, and I'll go back to the presentation again, and let me discuss it a little bit, and then I'll go to this video. The last part of the video will be shown it to you a little bit later. Is it visible by the online people now? Okay. Right. So, largely, if you look at this pie chart, you can see this is largely a rural area rather than urban space. And urban space is very, very less in this particular district. So, if you look at this data, why it is not moving? Okay. About 75% of Rajasthan is located in arid and semi-arid zone, where average annual rainfall is 490 millimeter. And if you look at this particular area, it is called dark zone. It is not because of the less development of the people, etc. Dark is not related to that. Dark zone is related to the groundwater availability. One is the rainfall is very less here. One part of the challenge is your geographical context itself, where it is located, what is the climatic condition, how it is impacting the agricultural production and all. That also matters a lot in education, especially in this kind of area where agricultural production is the main source of income, There is no other industry, etc. there. So it is called dark zone because the abstraction rates have exceeded recharge rates such that natural recovery is impossible. So in Rajasthan particularly, the government has declared some particular districts as dark zone, and there are implications of this on the school system. How it is, I'll talk about it a bit. And 207 administrative blocks of Rajasthan are designated as groundwater dark zone. So here, if you go there, you can see that most of the schools have some underground storage. Have you seen that in the video? There are some underground storage. That is basically rainwater storage. Whenever a little bit of rainfall happens, they store in the underground tank. And from that is the source of their drinking water. And can you imagine this kind of area where very fancy technological equipments are not there? What may happen to this groundwater storage? My students, when they are staying here, some of my students, especially the male students, I could allow them to stay in the school. Female students, I couldn't allow them because of the toilet problem. So the male students, when they are staying there, they have seen sometimes the water is contaminated, but there is no water. They had to consume this only. There is no other possibility, because from these villages to nearest source of water or nearest place of shop, it might be another 6 to 7 kilometers. And there is no transport. So this is the kind of area I'm talking about. That's why I just gave you the disclaimer that whatever you are getting out of this workshop, it may give you a different kind of scenario, which is not so good. But at the same time, we have to understand, we have to realize this is the reality, and there are children suffering like this. And let me go to the next part of this whole story. About Barmer district, it is a D category in terms of the development parameters. There are A, B, C, D category. You can see it is towards the end. HDI value is very low. Dark zone districts are these. One of those districts was Barmer, which was my study area. And there's a huge impact of this dark zone declaration on the teacher transfer and also on the midday meal scheme. So basically, I'll start with the midday meal scheme, as already we have discussed about it. When there is a drought in the dark zone, if drought is declared by the government, the teacher's summer vacation is withdrawn. You can't go for a summer vacation. During the summer, you have to provide midday meal to all the children. Whatever way you can, you have to. And imagine it is 50 to 52 degree temperature, and many of the schools don't have electricity. Teachers are staying there, providing midday meal to the children. And when people start judging the teachers are not doing this, and teachers are not doing that, I tell them that please go and stay with this teacher for a day. You can understand what the teachers are doing. We should clap for these teachers who are there at 50, 52 degrees Celsius and providing midday meal to the children, because it is the government order. Second part of the story is the teacher transfer policy. There is a policy of teacher transfer everywhere in India, in all the states. They have their own kind of arrangement. Here, the teacher transfer policy is dependent on the kind of grade you are teaching. So there are four grades. So when there are four grades, our grades are like primary. Right now, whatever we are following, primary is first to fifth grade. Some states it is first to fourth grade. Upper primary is roughly fifth to eighth grade. Then secondary is 9th to 10th grade, and higher secondary or senior secondary is 11th and 12th grade. That is the current kind of arrangement. Now the teachers who are teaching up to 1st to 8th grade, that is primary and upper primary, these teachers transfer is banned in this particular locality for last 15 years or more. Why it is banned? Because it is a vicious cycle. Teachers don't prefer to go to these schools. Teachers don't want to come to teach in these schools because of this kind of circumstances. And therefore, whoever is entering, their transfer is banned. and government doesn't tell them when the transfer will be open again, the transfer opportunity. So you can imagine, just think yourself, if you are getting into this kind of school, will you be a motivated teacher? So much of motivation, we talk about self-motivation of the teachers. Teachers should do this and that. Can you imagine you are staying in a village where there is no internet connectivity, no electricity. Electricity is very, very poor connectivity is there. And even for talking to your family people, you are struggling because connectivity is so poor and water is a crisis. And you are staying there and now people are saying that your transfer is banned. You can't go anywhere. You are here. So I met a lot of teachers here who are, because of the transfer ban, they are staying there for more than 15 years. And they are saying that we are just waiting for our transfer, nothing else. And what happens ultimately when this happens to the system? System takes the policy because of the situation, and situation gives a toll to the teachers, and it is ultimately affecting home, your children. So that is a kind of vicious cycle I could see here. Now, I'll quickly skip the data a bit because there are a lot of things to discuss. I would like to show you something about our system so that it will be easy for you to understand. So there are different layers. Whatever you are seeing here, these are the different layers. National level or the center level, then it is a state level, then it is a district level. Within district, within the, there are blocks. After block, there's a cluster. So there are hierarchies like that in our education system. And finally, it comes to your village, town, city, etc. And then finally, your school. So if you look at the kind of layers of all the decisions, fund flow, so it goes like this. It is not from bottom to top. It is always top to bottom. So finally, all the decisions for the schools are coming from top to the bottom, and they are the placeholders for all kinds of policies. Now, a next part of this, I'll immediately after this, I'll stop and I'll give you something to read. You can see the students studying in the schools, there's a difference between boys and the girls, right? And it is little old data. It is 2019 data. After that, the data was not much updated. So I'm looking for the latest data right now. So when I teach in the classroom, I don't know whether you follow this this particular paper. It is by create zones of exclusion. There are different zones of exclusion of the children. All kinds of zones I can identify in this particular area. So right now I'll stop for a while and I'll give you something. Two people can just go through whatever I'm giving. There are some messages from my students. Actually, 11 of my students worked in this project in the, various periods of time. But I asked them to just write about their learning experience. They might have given something about this project, etc. Forget about that. Whatever is their learning experience, if you can just mark some of the things which are striking you or which are little problematic you are finding. You can talk to each other. Two people, you can just share it. You will get some clips of my students, whatever they have seen, whatever they have found interesting or not so interesting. You will get a glimpse of it. I would request you to take 5 minutes time to just read, talk to each other, and then give me some pointer. Then I'll proceed. Is it fine? Okay.
Six, seven, eight. I believe it's not too late. Together we can change the world. Lay the puzzle pieces out. Find out what it's all about. Together we can change the world. Still past where it's been charted, rule your
Let us come back to the discussion now. What did you find? Anything interesting? Anything bothering you? Anything very problematic while talking to each other? Yeah. No, actually, there are online people also. Sorry. Yeah.
Hey, guys. Actually, there is something that boggles me very, very much, especially connected to the soundtrack you picked for the last video. My question is, what does the state think of the situation? Because it feels to me, and like it fears me very much, that although together we can really change the world, but then some nations, well, not nations, countries, yes, states, to put it this way, somehow choose those people who could be together and exclude those who cannot be. Like, does the government do anything about this situation, or is it being ignored somehow?
I don't have exact answer to you. What I felt here, especially in terms of the education, many organizations are working in Rajasthan. Many organizations, those are non-government organizations funded by multiple different agencies. But except for our foundation, I didn't see the footprint of any other organization in those remote areas. Very, very unfortunate. Government has some kind of PPP, you can say, private-public partnership, etc. I don't know how it is working there. But at the same time, what I personally feel here, which is majorly missing, is the transport, which is a very simple thing, transport. Because if you have noticed in the previous video, the hamlets are very scattered. So what happened, I can tell you, that with the RT Act, Right to Education Act, which came up in 2009, and before that, post our independence, 1947 was our independence, post that there are multiple education policies which have come up. 1968 was the first policy, then 1986 was another policy. Based on 1986 policy, we had Plan of Action in 1992, and 2009 we had RTE Act. After this RT Act came, the special attention was on the accessibility, physical access of the children to the school. So as a result, it was the concept of neighborhood school which came up. As a result of that, every kilometer, there was a primary school. So when every kilometer there's a primary school, even probably it is the same problem might be in Finland also. Probably in 1 kilometer range, you don't have enough children to teach. It might be possible in these kinds of areas I have seen, there are hamlets, there are small pockets, but hardly 5 to 6 children are there. And for 5-6 children, you can't start running a school. So what later part started happening, this initially it was started like every kilometer one school, they put up every kilometer one school. Later part, we started merging the schools in these kinds of localities. Now this merging of the schools has another layer of problem. So one particular hamlet might be located to 1 kilometer to this location, but it might be 3 kilometers from another location where the school is merged. Now how these children will go to that school, which is 3 kilometers away without any transport? And if you could see the second video of Barmer, that was my journey. There was absolutely no road. There is no road. I'm telling you up front, there is no road. We are just going on the semi kind of desert area. Not necessarily sand dune, but partly sandy terrain, very undulating. And in the scorching heat, can you imagine your child is going by walking for 3 to 5 kilometers to just study and come back by walking? And exactly that is happening. The children are coming by walking for 4 to 5 kilometers every day. 4 plus 4, 8 kilometers every day walking. And this walking is not a smooth walking. It is in that kind of terrain they are walking. And many of them are coming only for the midday meal, because midday meal is important for them. Many of them are enrolled because of mid-day meal, and they told us upfront that we are coming because my parents said, go and have your mid-day meal because we don't have enough food. So this is the kind of situation is also there. And it is not necessarily that all the people are poor. That is also not true here, because there are some areas where there are agricultural production. But the poverty, there are first layer I have talked about this physical access. Second problem is social access. What is that social access? The moment you are a girl child in the family, you are not privileged at all. You are not privileged to get anything in the family. Everything will be for the sons, and that son preference is huge in this locality. So as a result, when you are a girl child, the possibility of your survival is question mark. Second thing, if you are surviving, your entire decisions are with the parents. So that kind of social challenge is also there. And it is, again, it is coming in another vicious cycle. Why there is a social challenge? Because these people don't have any exposure outside world. Again, coming back to the same question of education. So the problems are very, very complicated. The way we think about all these things from outside, and many of the people who are just going, passing through Barmer, I could see the tourists going there. I have never been into the sand dune. It is just half an hour journey from that place to the sand dune area, which is a tourist spot of Jaisalmer. I could never be there, because the kind of things I was seeing in the field, after that, I was not having this kind of mental setup to go and enjoy sand dune. So what is your question? I don't have really the answer what government is thinking of, but there are multiple different kinds of processes government's tried. One is this transfer ban. But again, with the only transfer ban, you can't ensure the teachers will be motivated and go and start teaching. It's not so easy. Teachers are also human beings. At the end of the day, what happens? They come and they start saying, I'm here because it is my job. I'm here till my job is there. The moment I'll get job in another better place, I'll move. So there is no attachment of the teachers, many areas, with the children. But there are some spots which I could figure out. So one of the pictures probably you might have seen, which is there are some trees in the school. This particular school is very, very interesting school. The moment you will enter the school, there are 2-3 teachers who will give you a plant. They will say that you have come here for all the guests. We request them to plant a tree here, so that these children will be also seeing those things and saying that, okay, this person came and she was so educated. Especially the girls, they encourage them to do this, because girls are actually coming from very, very different, difficult kind of situation here. Did anyone get that story of a station workshop I have done? Arshal has made that. Anyone got this one workshop, which is written there in the reflection? Yeah. So in one of the groups, I went there, and there is a very good scheme of government that they distribute sanitary pad to the girl children. And we discovered there's a heaps of sanitary pad which is just piled up in head teacher's room, the principal's room. I was curious to know why these are piled up here. Why it is not distributed? They said that, no, we can't, because we don't have female teachers. Without female teachers, how can I hand over these things? So these kinds of boundaries are also there. As a result, we had to take a workshop for 1.5 hours. I was there with my student. You can't believe the children who are 13, 14 years of age, many of them didn't get a menstruation at that point of time. And they are so shy. In front of even 2 ladies, they couldn't talk to us. For almost 1.5 hours, we did the workshop. They couldn't talk to us. And they started saying later, these are the things which we should not speak about. We should keep our mouth shut every time whenever we are talking about these things. Our parents scold us like anything. So we should not talk about all these things. So this is the kind of circumstances they have. We did this workshop, and then we could feel what kind of social baggages and all these kinds of challenges are also a part of the education. And another very funny thing the teacher said, the day we distribute it, we ask the girls to go home immediately after taking the packet and go home. I said, why? Then they started, no, that should not be shown to the boys. It is very, very bad thing to show to the boys, and therefore they are asked to go back home. Even for those girls, because of the toilet issue, they can't come to the school during those 4 or 5 days of cycle. So they also told the same thing, and it's quite normal. Can you imagine you are losing your learning for 4 or 5 days every month because you are a woman, because you are a female student, and you are not supposed to come to the school because of toilet issue, which is not the issue of the child. So I'll go to the next part of the presentation where you can see what is happening here. And so if you look at this data is only on the public school. I am not talking about the private schools. There are around 25, 26 private schools here. But mostly the private schools, especially in this kind of location, are meant for better off people. I'm not talking about the better off children who can probably manage in a better manner. I'm talking about the public school children. What does it say, this pyramid? Anything? Yeah.
They don't expect a lot of students to continue on to higher secondary school. There's so many fewer higher secondary schools.
Exactly. So you can see the base for primary education, 260 primary schools, whereas it is going narrow and narrower. What does it mean? And at the same time, there's a crisis of local teachers over there. They don't have local teachers. Where will you get the local teachers if your children are not getting educated up to senior secondary? And till 2019, there was no college in that particular block. No college. Recently in 2019, one college came up, which is government college. Another college has come up, which is private college. I don't know how many teachers are there in those colleges. But till 2019, beginning of 2019 or mid of 2019, there was no college here. Now, I don't know how to respond to your question, what government thinks. I have the same question, and how to get out of this ECR cycle, I don't know. Therefore, what I was trying to do with my students, to sensitize them about this situation before getting into any judgmental mode, saying that, you know, the teachers are always bad and they don't do their work. If you go and stay and see the situation, you can see the complexity of the whole issue. Now, I'll go to the last bit of it. We don't have much time. So, this is a comparison of schools by grades. You can see there is a difference in the number in terms of your 2017 and 2023. There's a little bit increase in the number. What happened? And during this pandemic time, I couldn't visit. I got to know from my field coordinator, Mahavir, whose statement is also there in some of your hands. So he told me that there are some schools which were earlier secondary schools. Those are converted into senior secondary schools. That means children can go up to 12th grade. That has been ensured, and therefore the number has been increased to some extent. Now the number may make us happy. But coming to this, of the teacher's agony, that is a systemic problem. I spoke about physical issues, physical access issues, social access issue. Now coming to that systemic issue, you can see there are three grades, first grade, second grade, and third grade teacher. First grade teachers eligible as head teacher, they are the most qualified teachers. And degree in relevant subject, B.Ed and P.G. in related subject, B.Ed is our teacher education professional degree. So grade 1 and 2, 2 is eligible to teach the grades 9 to 12th, and they are graduate or equivalent examination with concerned subject as optional subject. So grade 1 or 2 are comparatively in a better position here because they can go for the transfer. Now look at this grade 3, there are two levels. One is up to 5th grade they can teach, one is up to 8th grade they can teach. these two set of teachers, their transfer is banned. Now, what may happen to this base? The base is like grade 3 people who are providing you the primary education. They are not able to go for any transfer, and therefore they are sitting here for 15, 16 years. And they are, many of them are very, very frustrated because of the situation. Now, I'll go to the next part of it. So my findings were mainly these. One is the geoclimatic conditions associated with the livelihood related aspects in this area, which you can't help. You can't change the geoclimatic condition. Next is impact of livelihood aspects on the trends, patterns, and practices of schooling. There is a trend here, mostly during the harvesting season and the sowing season of agriculture, children don't come to the school. If you go to visit schools, teachers will tell you casually, oh, this is harvesting season, they will not come now. Maybe 10 days, 15 days, they will not come. And even over the period of time, you can see the learning loss, which is accumulated. Every year, they are not coming at that particular point of time. Second, another trend is also there. If there's a festival in the village, they don't come to the school because there's a good food there. That is the main attraction. There's a festival in the village, there's a good food, children will not come to the school. And this festival season is normally in February. So now another cycle is that, imagine you are in an Indian school, especially like a barmaid kind of situation. You are in the school from month of June. And month of June, your school starts. July, August, September, probably you will go to the school. After that, your harvesting season will come. Your festival season will come from October. So September, October, November, forget about your schooling. On and off, you will be in the school. December, again, they have lot of sowing happens. December, they skip the school. February, it is again, lot of marriages happen in the villages. They don't come. How many months the students learn in the school? How many months students are coming to the school? And it is regular feature in many of the schools here. Now, it is so much in the cultural tradition and practices. Getting out of it is only possible if you can convince your parents. The parents are not convinced about all these things. Last part, which is your social cultural facts and factors that especially affect the children's schooling in these areas, that is, I have talked about. And last part is systemic issues associated with the public schools in remote and drought-prone areas. So, as I said already, that I'll come to this, and this is another interesting story I will have. Now, this last part is your systemic issues, which is your teacher transfer, teachers' motivation, and your kind of posting here. Most of the teachers who teach in these schools, they are not from this district. And when I say district, why it is a problem? Because from other districts, when they come to this district, they feel that I'm outsider. That feeling is also there. I am outsider because this district I don't belong to. Forget about the state. This is coming to the district and sometimes up to the block level also, that belongingness is not there. So these systemic issues come there. I'll give you another small worksheet. If you can interpret it a little bit, this one. You keep it. So I'll show you on the screen also. If some of you can tell me about the connections. So if any of you can interpret the connections which are shown in the This will tell you the whole story, and after this I'll conclude. I'll take some questions. If anyone can interpret this, the whole story in a nutshell.
I think a lot of us are asking, like, are these causes or effects or both? But looking at this, my question is, like, where would you put your thumb on the scale to affect the biggest change? If it were you, having been there, having seen this context and having understood more than we do, you know, after an hour in here, where is the biggest potential for change, potential for making an effect? Somehow in my head, it's in the transport and communication zone, and I don't know why. But it feels like improving that aspect of the infrastructure could have somehow a bigger knock-on effect further down the line.
Yeah. See, the transport communication and all these data transfer, all these things are systemic level issues, and they have to take the decision. It's not so easy, as I'm a very tiny researcher in a particular small university in that way. I can't bring that change. What I could see as a potential that, again, in our Right to Education Act, it is clearly stating that community participation is very much emphasized over there. And in this kind of context, where parents are very aloof about their children's education, they don't bother. I can tell you that they are bothered about their son's education, the boy's education, because of auto driving license. Because after the 8th grade, they get the auto driving license. Auto means auto rickshaw. They can be auto driver. So that driving license comes after 8th grade certificate. They go for that. And for the daughters, they don't prefer the education at all. The moment the daughters are very much educated, it will be difficult to get their partners. Marriage will be difficult for them. So therefore, daughters' education is not preferred. If we can start working at the micro level with some schools to encourage the parents to involve in the school, and we can show something in the spark, as I say, that some schools are showing that spark. For example, one school, probably in the video you have seen, that my students are just sitting with the children and someone is playing an instrument. There is a teacher who brought his instruments to play along with the children in the locality. And it is very remote area. You can see those sparking teachers over there. If we can start working with those schools individually, then probably we can, other schools can learn from each other. That is one way of doing as a citizen. I can't imagine I will go to the government saying that bring the transport or stop this teacher transfer ban and they will listen to me. In a country like 140 crore population in India, who am I to talk about all this? So I can see, as a researcher, we can bring those changes with our students, sensitizing them and starting our work with small schools, maybe in a micro region. That may bring some change. I can't imagine that change will come in my lifetime. Probably in another 50 years it will take, or maybe 100 years it will take to bring change to the 10 schools or 15 schools. But at least the thing will move forward. That is my only understanding. Any other comment? Otherwise, I'll just go to the last part. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
It is yours. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I totally agree about your comment, because like here also of one of the reflections said about the resilience of the community member. And because I come from a society that have really strong communal society, I can feel that, and I can project that community in education is like one potential that we can build or start the transformation. And that is my comment. And I want to ask about the situation there, about is there any enough autonomy for the teacher to teach, like refocusing the education orientation, like focusing on community building, something like that? Or how about the curriculum implementation there? Are there really strict to the national curriculum, or is there any autonomy for the teacher?
For the teachers, the curriculum comes from the national curriculum, and that is the framework. Based on that, state curriculum is prepared at the state level. So that state curriculum they have to follow. And this is another bonding of the teachers, because the exam system is like that. You have to complete your terms at a particular period of time. Whether the children have learned or don't learn, doesn't matter. The deadlines are very strict in that way. There are exam time, there is finishing of some portions and all these things. They don't have that autonomy. However, they have little bit of autonomy. They can tweak the exam system, as it is not board examination. They can tweak the exam within the, when it is not board examination, they can tweak it. But at the same time, the teachers need that kind of capacity also to get a hold of it. The point I'm raising it in terms of the local teacher is this. When you own that place and you own your children, the moment your children's learning suffering, you will feel about it and you will start doing something. If you don't own them, you say that, okay, I have come and I am doing my task as a part of my job, probably there is a problem. So the ownership is not there necessarily in all the schools, but there in some schools, I have seen that ownership is very, very strong. If we can start cracking those schools and doing some good work with the community participation, parental involvement, whether the parents are literate, illiterate, we don't need to bother. We can start working in a small pockets, and small bubbles may be created by us. So that's why, that was one of the reasons I started working there. And post-pandemic, I couldn't start working because the data is all scattered and I don't know what was happening during this 2 years time of pandemic. Forget about this online and all these things. I don't know whether the children are at all able to come back to the classroom or not. So I have to start exploring that again. I'm not in a position to tell you the current situation. Yeah. So with this, I'll just stop because we don't have much time. But before stopping, I would like you to watch the last part of my this thing. So much for coming and giving me the opportunity to discuss this with you. If any question, comment is there, I'm here to listen to you if we have 1-2 minutes. Thank you so much. Yes, there are questions or comments.
Thank you. I'm sorry, everyone, for talking so much today. I have a comment, and first of all, I'm really grateful for the whole thing, for your presentation, for your hard work. You're doing an incredible work for your community, first of all. And my comment is pretty simple. I think It is very much unfair that you say that you are no one to reach out to, you know, the government and other people and whoever else is there and whoever else is worried about the education worldwide, because every person matters. And for some people, I'm pretty sure for educators, your opinion would matter a great deal more. So what we really need, no matter where we are in the world, we need to hear educators' voices. We need to hear teachers. By fostering teachers' community, we can make a bigger change. That's what I believe it. I believe in. So we shouldn't really hope for this equality and prosperity and other things, but we need to start acting for it and acting together. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for this encouraging word, because this gives me hope again. When I'll go back there, I'll go there with all these participants' face that they are with me. At least some people have listened to this, know about these children who are actually waiting for the people to come. And whenever I go there, they start asking, are you coming to join our school? I feel so bad about it. Really, it feels like I should go. But again, I have my own circumstances because of that. I can't promise. But at least I can promise that so many people from international community are there with us now to give some good suggestions. Yeah, thank you so much. Ready?
Thank you so much, Saswati, for this and continuing the conversations with us. Something in reflection to that, I think it's also like India being such a huge, for example, in comparison to Finland, if we think of Finnish government and Indian government, you know, it is so difficult to, you know, we cannot compare in a sense, like thinking that, you know, how, for example, change is made. And then I'm thinking, I don't know, the little things that I learned during my stay in India is also that the type of work that is done in these rural areas, actually working with these communities and with these people, empowering them in a sense, because then there's also this fear that when the government comes, it actually does something that is not actually helping these communities, but it's actually taking the land or taking, you know, their ownership of their own life away. So in that sense, like the complexities of these things and that, but then, you know, in that sense, like taking the student teachers to the communities in a morning talk, I think there were a lot of these good questions and conversations on, you know, how we can give student teachers these experiences where they, you know, something, you know, something that make, you know, may change their thinking, may make a change for them. So I think this is one of these examples that for example, that they've learned people's life from a completely different perspective, which has in different ways changed their thinking and their life. And then maybe, you know, they are the future, you know, making the changes and that kind of these little things. Yeah.
I always feel when my students were going there and students of Barmaid context, the children, when they saw the people coming and standing in front of them, being girls, they are just going from one state to another, that is a big dream for them. They could at least realize that this is possible. This is another set of world. Because in many of these schools, when I go into the classroom, I don't go for teaching or anything, but they ask me to say anything. And sometimes I'm a geographer, basically. So I start drawing something in terms of either world map or maybe India map. I ask them, where are you? Believe me, many people, they tell me, what is the name of the state? They don't know the name of the state is Rajasthan and their district is Barmer. They say that their name of the state is Barmer. So this is the kind of responses I get in the 7th, 8th grade. It is not the little children. So that is the kind of learning level. So I don't go for the judgment, etc. But I can see the kind of spark when we are there. They start asking, where are you from? Where are you coming from? Are you coming alone? So coming alone for a female, especially for the girl children, it is a big deal for them. And that itself is creating some space for them to think differently. So these are the small, small things which give me the pleasure. And yes, I will keep the hope, of course. Thank you so much, Heidi. It is because of Heidi and her team I could come here and present it. Thank you so much, Heidi, for this opportunity.
It was you who opened the conversation with us in India.
So, yeah.